Zach Slaff.
Oh my God.
Dude.
Right into it.
Right into right it, my into friend. It. Dude, it's so funny because like I have to watch it because I used to scream the guest name like into the microphone.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, and I'll pull my mic away. I'd used to be like, you know, Jess Levin or whatever. And like when I would edit it in post, it would just like blast in people's ears. So it was terrible. But Zach, thank you so much for coming on,
hey, man,
dude.
Thank you so much for having me. It, you know.
It's a blast. Dude, I love we try to start with compliments around here, and I don't tell the comedians that because otherwise they won't stand for it. But one thing I love about I've seen your act a bunch, and you're kind enough to do the bookstore shows, and you're so funny, and I love you are genuinely yourself on stage, which I think for a lot of comics takes some time to hone, but like who you are on stage is the same person off, and I just think that's it's so interesting to watch like back and forth.
Yeah, I
like,
definitely I would probably say the same about you.
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, and I feel like I...
We don't do compliments back. No,
okay, cool. I'll say something mean now.
No, there you go.
I think it took me a little while to... Because I think when I got back into comedy a couple of years ago...
Okay.
What was really important to me was like finding my comedic voice.
Sure.
And trying to find out, what is my persona on stage? And I kind of got obsessed with it a little bit.
Oh, that's interesting. So it was something you were like actively working on.
I was actively trying to figure out.
Okay.
And I was, for a while, I was really lost. Like, I was really lost about it.
Yeah.
And then just the more I did it and the more I performed, the more comfortable I got. And then I kind of just realized, like, I can just do myself. Like, I can just be myself and just, you know, worry more about what I'm writing rather than how the performance actually looks and appears.
Yeah.
Because I think if my writing is good, then I can deliver it fine.
I can
deliver it well.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm just going to turn your mic up a little bit. I hear you on that. And it's something like I still actively work on. Although I will say, you know, thinking back to like how I've, you know, I think one of the things I've worked on a lot this year is to that point, right? Just like going up and not making it seem so rehearsed and just talking, you know, just having a conversation with the audience, which I think is like you said, that comes so much with time. You said you got back into comedy, so you took a break.
I took quite a long break.
Oh, that's interesting. Can we talk about that?
Yes,
So when did you start?
I started in high school. I started senior year of high school.
Wow.
My dad.
Your dad?
My dad was an amateur comic in the 80s.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
So he was the one who kind of told me to get into it. He took a class. It was my senior year of high school. He took a class with a guy named Lee Navlin,
who
was a very nice guy. He was a comic. And I went to my dad's graduation showcase. And then like right after, he suggested that I do the class the following semester, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, get out.
And I did it.
Yeah.
And I was with a great group of people.
Sure.
And I just had a really good time. And honestly, it gave me confidence that otherwise in high school, I definitely didn't have.
Sure, sure.
Too bad it was at the end of high school. So once I was out and then I had to go to college and start afresh. And then I went to college in New Orleans and I should tell this story. I went to college in New Orleans at Tulane, which is a wonderful school. And I was like, all right, well, I got to keep doing comedy. I got to continue doing comedy.
Which at such a college age is that's a good outlook to have.
I know.
Yeah.
But I went and the first time I performed, I was so nervous.
Oh, no.
Because it was new world, new audience.
Sure.
I bombed terribly.
Okay.
And that was before, I was too young. I didn't really know what bombing was even at that time.
Okay.
But I knew that was a bomb. That's
sure,
what I knew.
Sure.
And then there was another situation where I went to, and I was fresh-faced. I was 18. I didn't know anything about New Orleans. I didn't know anything about anything. But I went to a open mic that was an open mic / burlesque show. I didn't know what the hell a burlesque show was.
Sure, sure.
So I went. I was like this twerpy 18-year-old. Like, I went. I signed up. I was like last on the list.
Okay.
And then, you know, comics start going up. And in the middle, the burlesque acts start going.
So did you go in the first half or the second half of the show?
I was at the end.
Oh,
so
stop.
I was after all of the burlesque acts. And I was like, what is happening right now?
Yeah.
Like, what are these women doing?
Oh, my God.
And it was one of the most intimidating environments to ever
You have to follow burlesque.
I mean, I don't even, like, it's like I blacked out in that moment. Yeah. I don't remember what happened next. I think I had to, you know, call my dad 3,000 miles away and have him call an Uber and pick me up because my phone was dead or something like that.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. So my escapades of comedy in New Orleans during college were, I was a little bit discouraged by those moments.
Really?
So I kind of stopped.
Oh, really? Okay. So you like started and then, it's those first bombs when you start out. I mean, they're so essential, obviously, but like, man, they hurt you to your core. Like
they do. And especially when you're young and vulnerable like that.
I was a kid. Yeah, exactly. Like, and you had taken one stand-up class at that point.
One stand-up class. I'd performed, you know, at one show and then done a few open mics here and there in different environments.
Had you talked to your dad about it? And were you like, hey, Dad, I bombed so bad? Like,
I don't think so. I think I really kept it to myself.
That's hard too. And I get that. And I probably would have done the same thing. But it's like, man, you think back, it's like you had that resource who probably, you know, he would have told you that's part of it, man. You got to like just keep it going.
He definitely would have. I definitely would have appreciated his advice. But I just don't think I was, again, I don't think I was vulnerable enough. I don't think I was,
sure. Yeah.
You know, had the understanding or the knowledge enough to really ask for help, especially in a space where so many people don't know anything.
Yeah,
about it.
Absolutely. Especially in college too, man. Yeah. It's like, you know, you don't know anything when you're in college.
No, you don't know anything.
Was it weird seeing your dad do stand up or?
It was cool.
That's cool.
What would be weirder? I want to see the tapes from the '80s. I don't think I've
you haven't
I don't,
seen them
I don't
yet?
Think I've seen them before.
Oh, cool.
So that's like, I have to ask him to hunt them down.
Okay.
Hopefully he still has some of them.
Imagine you guys have like the same material. That would be so funny.
Just like the modern version of
his material. Exactly.
He's talking about phone calls. I'm talking about text. It's the same jokes. That would be pretty funny.
You're talking about like dating apps. He's talking about like those VHS dating profiles. No, that's so cool. So he's been like supportive of you and like
very, I mean,
that's
my,
great.
My family, my parents, they come to so many shows. They've always been really supportive of me. I think they want me to, you know, I think they've always seen me as somebody who wanted to express themselves, so they
sure.
want me to do it.
That's really
so
cool.
So they've encouraged
yeah.
it and they've always wanted it. When I stopped, I think they were trying to, you know, inch me, get me back into it.
Oh, that's really cool.
Some kind of other productive, you know, creative things. I was doing filmmaking in college.
Okay, so you stopped doing stand-up and then you went into filmmaking for a little bit.
Still comedy. You know,
sure.
Comedy really means a lot to me. It's really important to me.
Have you seen Naked Gun?
I have not seen Naked Gun.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. I heard it's amazing. I've heard
it's really good.
Yeah, I've heard like it's like, and this is very shameful to admit, but I haven't seen the originals. But I did hear that this one on its own is very good.
Yeah.
And it's like modern, but also like a nice homage to the originals. And it's, a lot of comics I've talked to really like it.
I watched the original a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's totally Airplane vibes, and I've seen Airplane about
Airplane
a million times.
Is like, what I really appreciate that, obviously, like some of the jokes are dated, but like there's one scene, I don't know if you remember, but they're driving in the car and the green screen is changing in the background. And I'm like, this movie's from, is it the 80s?
Yeah.
I think. I was like, that would work today.
Yeah, it
like,
would.
You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? I'm like, oh my God.
Absolutely. And I feel like there's been a void in like these silly movies.
Yes.
We need silliness.
Yeah. We need movies that really make you fucking die in a movie
exactly.
theater. Like,
absolutely.
With laughter, obviously.
But I mean, I feel like that, like, when Borat came out, like, that's what the experience people were having, super bad.
Yeah.
You know, these movies where people were, like they were going to the theater to have an experience.
Yes.
And that's kind of back now, post-pandemic.
I was
going to
say, I think it's coming back, which is really exciting, because I think what they're doing is smart, because now, and again, I'm talking, like, from my perspective, right? Like, because you can go to the movies, right? Do the popcorn movies, whatever. Now they're, like, it's so expensive anyway. They're making it so, like, if you pay a little bit more, you can get, like, a little dine-in experience, which is nice. I like that, right? Because I will pay, because it is, you know, it is so expensive now.
It's stupid.
So it's like,
stupid.
If you're going to spend that money, I'll pay a little more to have that experience. Like, we went to, I think it's the Alamo in New York City. We saw
Alamo Draft House.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. And they have the honor system free take a VHS or DVD, which is unbelievable to me.
That's pretty cool,
yeah. Yeah, it is. But yeah, dude, we need, like, I remember... I went to see Neighbors in the movie theaters.
Funny movie, yeah.
That movie's great. And then The Other Guys, I don't know.
That's a crazy movie. That movie's hilarious.
I dude, when he does that tuna lion speech in the beginning, I remember being, I think it was like 14. I remember like keeling over laughing.
Yeah.
And it's hard because like you just, like you said, it's like they're few and far between now, but I do think they're coming back.
I think
like
too.
Like we had talked about, like Tim Robinson's Friendship was great.
Very good movie.
That was
really funny, really weird.
Yes.
Perfect casting.
Yes.
And you know, I Think You Should Leave, you know, that's the,
I mean, that's, yeah. it's phenomenal. And then I'll say a spoiler alert. So fast forward about 15 seconds if you don't want this part spoiled, but when he goes on the drugs and he goes to Subway, have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Oh, okay.
I've seen it.
All right, good. I thought I was explaining it for you, but like he goes to Subway and then he comes out and he's like, "How'd it feel, man?" He's like, "I just went to Subway." Is like one of the funniest things I've seen. I also saw it a little stoned. I love seeing a movie stoned.
Oh, me too.
I don't know about you, but oh my God, that's.
And I mean, that's kind of the perfect environment. You're sitting for hours.
Yeah,
you take an edible. Oh, you go in.
It's great.
It's
like
a perfect. That's maybe how you're supposed to see the movies.
And
I feel bad for people who don't smoke weed because it might be the optimal.
I know, dude. You know, because then you just
get
like,
I don't want to cramp on anybody.
No, I know. But it's like, but they're wrong. Yeah, exactly. But it's like, you just get so enveloped in it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you're there, you're present. Like, I went to go see my friend Tony Ferraro, shout out, who's done this podcast. I think he's a brilliant improviser, and he just did a show at UCB last Saturday, and I smoked a little before I went.
Okay.
Dude. I mean, their set was great anyway. Dying laughing.
Yeah.
Because it's like, and that's improv is another great one to go see.
Right, exactly.
A little stony baloney. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, you want that as a comic too. You want people to be involved. You want people to be laughing.
Yeah.
And if they're a little high, doesn't make a difference to me.
And what's interesting is like now I'm interested to see where things go because people are drinking less. Which I don't know if you've seen like articles about that, but it's like, I feel like every day in like the Wall Street Journal or like the New York Times, there are articles. It's like nobody's drinking anymore. So it's like, it's interesting how
they're saying it like it's a bad thing.
How
are they talking about it?
I think it's like, I think it's like the younger generation just like isn't interested in it. And I think they view it almost like how we view cigarettes, where it's like unhealthy and it's like maybe not worth the juice isn't worth the squeeze. Which I've never used that.
This is the first time
you're
using the expression.
It's very exciting for me. but I think and comedy clubs, right? It's like people go out to drink and stuff like that. So it's, I don't think it'll ever be a situation where people don't drink ever, but it's just interesting, I think. Like it's almost like a change in values type thing. You know what I mean?
It is. And I've been doing comedy, you know, consistently for 2.5 years. How the hell do you avoid alcohol?
That seems
like an impossibility. I don't even know how I would begin to think about.
You know, I will say, I think maybe like, and I'm, you know, I wasn't in the scene 10 or 15 years ago. I think it maybe was a little harder now. I will say I do hang out, and maybe just the comics I hang out with. I hang out with a lot of comics that are just sober. And I've talked to them about this specific thing, and they just say like they have to take that firm, hard stance where it's like, no, I'm not drinking.
Yeah, it's a zero tolerance policy.
Yes, exactly. Because you're around it constantly.
I mean, that's what you have to, and for people in that position, they have to do that.
Yeah.
In all spaces.
Right.
You go to a wedding, you can't have a drink.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah.
Show, you can't have a drink. You know, you go to this dinner, fancy dinner, you can't have a glass of wine. So they're probably used to it. They probably are, you know, they're probably experts at this point, many of them.
Yes. Yeah.
Not drinking. So, you know, I mean, kudos to those people because I would have to put a lot of work into myself to be able to not.
I'm the same way. Yeah. And like, cause like when I go to a wedding, I'm notorious for getting super drunk at welcome drinks. Like, because it's so much energy that first night, right? It's like you're seeing everybody and it's like, there's, you know, everyone's so happy to be together and stuff like that. Yep. And it's just, and an open bar, like they just, you know, they won't.
Yep.
I've never been a problem or anything, but it's like, I've definitely gotten home and Taylor was like, yeah, you were annoying.
I mean, I just had my bachelor party this past week.
Oh, dude. Well, so, yes, I forgot. I'm sorry. I forgot to ask you about it.
I went to Wildwood, New Jersey.
Nice. How was that?
Yes, it was fabulous.
Nice.
Did you guys drink a lot? We drank quite a bit.
Okay.
So, you know, that's kind of like, luckily nobody, or not luckily, but you know, everybody who came drank to different degrees. Some people don't drink that much, but they were still able to have one. I couldn't imagine, you know, coming to a bachelor party and not being able to drink at all.
Well, that's the thing, is the option needs to be there for people.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like I see now, like not necessarily with a bachelor party, but like people are having sober weddings. And it's like, you can't invite all this. Are you doing a sober wedding?
I'm not.
Okay. Sorry. Imagine like you were. You're we're doing one. No, but it's like you need to give people the option. If they want to, it should be there. But anyway, so you went to Wildwood, and it sounds like there was a vibe, like, if you wanted to drink a lot, you could. There were guys that wanted to do
it. Yeah, I mean, it was,
if you didn't,
I'll admit, some of my, you know, my friends were feeding me drinks, they were encouraging
Yeah, of course,
it,
I mean, you're
I'm
the guy. Yeah, so everyone's
going
to try and get you.
To do that.
Yeah.
I think the people who didn't really want to drink didn't drink, so it was totally fine.
Are you, and I feel like I know the answer to this question, are you like me, where it's like, your friends love when you get drunk, so they just like keep getting you.
Yeah, I know. They are.
Yeah, so it's
I guess maybe I'm fun. I guess I'm a little too fun.
Well, that's the thing. Right? Well, that's what it is, man. And it's like, you know, and it's
not
like,
to brag, not to brag, but I'm a little fun when I get drunk. Like,
well, the thing is too, and it's like, like, especially being like comedians, you want to like people please, and you want people to like you. So it's like half of it is like, all right, guys, I'll make you happy and we'll do, you know, and a lot of times they're laughing. So it's like, oh, this is good. Like,
yep, exactly.
We'll keep it going. But that's fun. So you guys, what did you guys do? Did you guys did you have an itinerary?
We didn't have too much of an itinerary.
Okay.
I really wanted to spend time on the beach.
Okay. But that's something to do.
That's something to do.
Yeah.
We had one beach day, but it was like a fantastic beach day.
Oh, cool.
I don't know if you know about the beaches in Wildwood. They're
I know nothing.
They're huge.
Is it Wildwood like, in Jersey Shore?
It's the South Jersey.
South Jersey Shore. Okay.
It's like on New Jersey's little penis. Do you know New Jersey has a little
yes,
penis?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize
that's where it is. Yeah. It's right next to Cape May.
Okay.
I always thought it was very entertaining that New Jersey has its own little penis. The beaches are huge. It like takes like 20 minutes. It takes like 5 minutes of walking to get from the top of the beach to the bottom, but that's a long 5 minutes.
Yeah, sure.
And the water, I mean the waves, the water. I love going to the beach.
Sure.
I love swimming.
Me too.
So you know, when the waves are aggressive, like that's my jam.
Yeah. So
just because I get lost in that.
It's like
that is like a magical experience.
It's very healing, right?
It is really healing.
Because you think about it, right? I think I'm doing biology. My AP bio teacher a service by saying this. I think like we come from the ocean.
Yes.
Life does. And, you know, we, you know, it's just, it's returning to nature in a
absolutely.
Very primal
like
way.
Use water for therapeutic purposes.
Yeah, exactly. And like I have raging
baptisms.
Baptisms. Yes. It's healing. And my big thing is going to sound so nerdy. I have like severe eczema. So like the salt water is great for skin, which is
that's
great.
Good.
So yeah, if you have eczema out there, you could do that.
Good.
But that's great. So you guys went and you said, we're going to have a beach day.
We're
going to
have a beach day.
Okay.
You know, we spent time in the Airbnb. We went out to a couple really nice dinners. We did some mini golfing late at night.
Freaking love mini golf, dude. That's like
went on the boardwalk for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then the last thing we did was, we went to this pretty big bar, like one of those big outdoor bars that have a bunch of different sections.
Nice, yeah.
And there was a live band playing.
That's
so
awesome.
You know, one of the things that my friends know about me, I love live music.
Oh, you do? I didn't know that.
I love live
very
music.
Cool.
I'm a musician myself. So
I didn't know you
play. Guitar,
what do you?
I play drums,
oh, very cool.
I play guitar. So you know, anytime I have the opportunity to see a live band.
Yeah.
I go a little crazy. I dance. I go a little nuts. I think that's one of the reasons they were feeding me drinks too. They just wanted me to like go nuts.
I love that.
Yeah.
This is a shot in the dark. Do you know this band called Ripe by any chance?
I don't know Ripe.
Dude, I like just discovered them a few years ago, just on Spotify, like discovered. Well, they've become my favorite band. I saw them.
Nice.
I didn't get the live music craze, truthfully. Like in other words, not crazy, but like I would go to concerts. I would have a good time.
Yeah.
Like, and I've been very fortunate. I've seen Paul McCartney and Billy Joel, and they've been amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying they weren't, but like I was never immersed in a musical experience like that. Like, you know what I mean? But I went to go see them again, a little stoned.
Yeah.
And best concert of my life.
Wow.
And Tay came with me too. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This is amazing. I was in the crowd. I wasn't like,
that's
you know,
awesome.
For those other concerts, I had seats, you know, we were up. So I think that impacts it too.
Yeah.
But dude, great. And especially when you're like out at a bar like that, where it's like, you know, just a band playing their hearts out. That's
what
fun.
What kind
too.
Of music are they?
They're ska.
Oh, ska. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I think you can definitely
ska
do
band. I mean, that's like
dude,
instrumental.
I fucking love ska.
That's like
and I know that's
like, you know, so many different instruments, you know,
yes.
all sorts of things.
Well,
horns,
dude.
Yeah.
It's like, let's do a band and put horns in it.
Yep.
It's like, this genius.
It's like, perfect. Whoever put that idea, oh, a band?
A saxophone.
What? Who?
They're super, super great. I love them so much.
That's
and
awesome.
Yes, it was so cool. But what I love is that it sounds like you guys like had an idea about what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a firm believer that for bachelor parties, you need to know what you're doing each day.
Okay.
Because for men, if you don't, you're literally just going to sit in front of a TV and play Nintendo Switch all day. Like, that's that's what it's going to be.
I guess you're right. I kind of have this belief that, like, you can go with the flow.
No,
I
but like go with the flow. But you went to a place, like, you had options to do like that. That's, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, like, and you had an idea about what you wanted to do.
Yep,
so I'm not even saying, like, it has to be a firm thing, but it's like, okay, the bachelor knows what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Because I know people, you know, I have friends who want to really meticulously plan out every part of a trip.
Yeah.
And that kind of, I'm like, what's the, like
exactly.
Spontaneity.
Yeah, exactly.
Do something off the cuff.
Right.
Be spontaneous.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, have some fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, we're fun when we're drunk. Like, dude, I'm so glad you had a good time. And we both share, too. We were talking before the pod. We're both engaged.
We're both engaged.
Super exciting time.
Yeah.
We fucking won. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. But it's really nice, I think.
Yeah.
And Hoboken's a great town to be engaged in at this point in time,
really,
I'll say.
Good point.
Yeah, it's a very coupley town. Were you ever single in Hoboken?
I was never single in Hoboken.
That's good, because I was, dude, I was single here, and it's literally like you walk down the street and you want to just like bang your head against the wall, because it's couple, dog and couple,
exactly.
Couple. So it's
all different degrees. You literally pass a couple with a couple, then a couple with a cat, then a couple with a dog, then a couple with a small child, then a couple with a slightly larger child.
Yeah, and then, like, there's parents with, like, college kids
exactly,
coming back to visit them. Yes,
literally, you're watching life happen.
Dude, I hadn't thought about that, but that's so true for Hoboken. It's like people just all walks of life, but they have to have partners. It's it's like a requirement here. How long have you been living in Hoboken?
I've been living in Hoboken since the start of 2023. So,
oh, cool.
2.5 years.
All right, cool. Yeah. Where were you before?
I lived in New Orleans after I went to college.
Right.
Lived in New Orleans after college, and then I went home in the middle of 2022.
Okay.
Stayed with my folks for about half a year, and then I got a job and moved out to Hoboken.
What was it like living in New Orleans? Because I've been there.
Oh,
and
my
it's...
God. I love New Orleans.
It's one of the only cities left in America that has its own identity.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
It has. I can't think of a city in America that has a stronger identity.
I agree. Yeah.
You know, a unique vibe. It's almost like you're in a different country. Like,
yes.
A little bit. Like, it has so many different cultural elements. You know, I feel like people have this idea that it's such a great tourist town, but it wouldn't be that great of a place to live in. It is a great place to live in.
Yeah.
I really... And I did leave, but... The reasons I left were, there were weather reasons. You know, I had to evacuate a hurricane in 2021. I had to Hurricane Ida.
Oh, my God.
Which was a very bad hurricane.
Yeah.
It affected the city a lot. And I had to evacuate. I think after dealing with that, it was definitely like, the cultural elements of the city can't be beat. But the idea of having to potentially evacuate once a year.
That's scary. Can you tell us, like, what that was like?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Let me get a sip.
No, I love it. You know? No, it's good. Like, this is, I love, we're about to, like, get in.
Yeah. So I don't know why my mouth gets dry so often, and especially when I'm doing comedy.
I feel bad, too. It's a little hot with the lights and stuff. Yeah.
So evacuating the hurricane, right? I could have left a day earlier. I should have. People knew what was coming.
Okay.
They knew that this was going to be big. They knew it was going to be bad. It was the 16th anniversary of Katrina. It hit on the same day as Katrina.
Really? I didn't know that. Wow.
31st.
Wow.
I could be wrong. I could be way off. Don't quote me.
It's okay. For this podcast, he's right. We don't. We famously don't fact check on this
podcast. No fact checking. Okay, good. Then I can say whatever the fuck I want.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. All right. And I think I probably should have left a day early, because when I left, I went to Houston. And luckily, I had some friends that were going to Houston. We had a hotel room. We were going to stay there. It took me 15 and a half hours to get from New Orleans to Houston by car.
Oh my God.
And that's a 5-hour drive.
Yeah.
It took me 15 hours because the traffic was so bad. So I was sitting in a car by myself for 15 and a half hours.
Did you have food with you or anything? Or just
I don't think so.
Oh my God.
I think I might have stopped. I think I might have stopped for food once it became safe.
But. And just for, like, because, again, I'm geographically not with it, but Houston to New Orleans, how long is that drive normally?
Like 5 hours.
5 hours. Oh,
yeah, so it was,
God,
like triple the length
of
time.
And was, like, Houston the destination a lot of people were
Houston
going to?
Houston was the destination. Some people were going to Florida. Some people were going north. I think I could have gone. probably could have gone north somewhere and reached somewhere faster.
Yeah.
But we had plans, and we had plans to stay in Houston with a couple of my buddies. So
right. So you had that as a backup.
I really had to get there.
Yeah. So when you're like, where is the storm relative to you when you were evacuating? Was it like it was just on its way? So like you weren't in it, right?
It was like gonna hit the next day.
Wow.
It was like gonna hit the next day. Yeah. And my roommate, who I that's a whole other podcast, Matt.
We'll have it back when you return. Well, yeah, we'll talk about that low point.
We'll talk about a low point. But he stayed in the apartment.
Wow.
What a dumbass.
Yeah, what happened?
He was fine, but one of the dumbest things I've ever seen anybody do.
And I feel like there's always these people that like take pride in it when they stay like for these hurricanes.
I know. They want to say, oh, the weather's not that big a deal. Yeah. It's not going to be that bad. It's a hurricane.
Right.
It's a giant flying ball of destruction that's going to come and kill your town. Okay? Get the fuck out. What are you doing? Oh, your hubris is too big to where you can't leave because you worried that somebody's gonna call you a pussy. That's
what it comes down to. Yep, they're worried. It comes down because it's always men. You can't tell me women. Men. You can't.
No woman would ever stay.
No way.
You're right. You're absolutely right. No question.
It's just the men that are like, you know what? I can weather it. That's insane. So what ended up happening to your apartment?
My apartment was fine. Okay, I lived in the warehouse district at that time.
Okay.
And I was a little worried because it was a nice apartment with big windows. So yeah. Like if something happened to one of those windows,
right,
they
gonna
cracked,
get shattered. Yeah.
It would have been a big problem. But luckily everything was okay.
And where is that in relation to Bourbon Street? Because that's my only like.
Yeah. So the warehouse district is not that far from Bourbon Street. It's probably like a 15-minute walk from the French Quarter.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
It's like it's like between the Garden District and the French Quarter.
Gotcha.
That's where the warehouse district is.
So you evacuated, you went to Houston, mm-hmm. stayed with some friends, you went back and you were like, I can't stay here.
I had a job at the time. I thought I liked the job, but I didn't really see any opportunities for me to grow.
Sure.
It's not, you know, the film industry there at that time that's when it was really starting to, you know, peter down.
Okay.
In 2020, I don't know if people know this, you know, people talk about New Orleans as a film town. It is very, and it was a film town at different points.
And I feel bad mentioning this. I did not know it was a film town.
It was a film town for a few different periods of time. 2021 was a very successful year for New Orleans film. But I think that between the hurricane and some of the tax laws, and there's a few other things, it kind of petered down.
Okay.
It's struggling a lot more now.
Now, were you working in film specifically during
that? I was working at a film studio.
Oh, very cool. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. What were you doing for them specifically?
I was doing like podcast work because they were doing some in-house production too.
Sure.
So I was kind of working on podcast editing.
Okay, gotcha.
And video editing and stuff.
Oh, very
like that,
cool. So. Well, shout out to some comics listen to this podcast. So obviously, I'll, you know, spread it. We'll tell everybody.
We'll tell everybody I know how to edit a video.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Good. Let's see how my DMs do after that. Hopefully, will you be able to edit my video for $2? I don't know.
You get like 25 DMs from people. You're like, great, Matt. Now you gave me more work.
Yeah, exactly. If I like you, I'll do it for free.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
But I better like you a lot.
I feel bad. Now I blew up your spot.
Oh, it's okay. It's fine. Worst things have happened.
So when did you move to New York after? You said 2023 around?
2022 is when I left New Orleans, and then at the beginning of 2023, I moved into Hoboken.
Was it hard to leave New Orleans? Or
it was hard. I left, and I came back, and I was living with my parents, and I was like, damn, I wish I'd never left. I was now I'm really happy. Now I'm really, you know, I love Hoboken.
Me too.
I've really learned to love Hoboken.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
I think so too. And it's becoming like such a desirable location for people, like, because the city's like getting ridiculous now in terms of like pricing and stuff. Like, I was just talking to someone today and they were like, yeah, we moved into the city. We used to live in Hoboken. Now we're thinking about moving back to Hoboken.
Exactly.
It's a cult. It's like people come here and it's like, come to Hoboken.
Well, it's got culture. It's got a vibe. It's got the right demographic, young people. It's got, you know, it's a hip town.
Yes.
I don't know. I sound like a boomer when I say
no,
it's a
you know,
town.
I like hot take. I like saying things are hip.
Yeah.
I like
things
it.
Are hip.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't care that it makes me sound older.
Yeah,
I like it a lot.
You sound mature. You sound very mature.
That's what I'm. That's what it is.
You sound very mature.
That's what it is.
You sound like you have good boots on your feet.
Yes, yes. Something like that. And that I have wisdom.
Yes.
Right. That I know what was hip. Wisdom. Yes. It's like it's hip. It's hip. It's now. It's what are the kids saying now?
Skibbity Riz.
Skibbity Riz.
That's what they're saying.
Bap. We're gonna edit that. No, we're not. We don't edit on this pod. No, that's wonderful. And yeah, the thing about Hoboken too, it's the perfect balance of having access to the city and also your own little community.
Exactly.
Like a little town. So it's.
And I live in the back. I live on Marshall Street.
That's nice. Because
it's a little quieter.
Yes.
Although I live right by the light rail. But that's I live by awesome. A light rail stop, so I can. You know, like right next to a light rail stop.
Oh, yeah. So if you got a... do you work in the city now?
I work in the city now.
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
I'm hybrid. I go about two times a week.
That's the perfect balance. Yep. It's this like... And it's because I come from a family, right? So I'm very lucky I get to work remote for like my line of work.
Yep.
My whole family, all but one medical. So like, and then my dad's owns his own contracting business. So it's like, they fucking hated me during the pandemic. They hated me so much. And they still kind of do. Cause it's like, oh, what's the matter? You're working remote. And it's like, look, obviously what they do is so important.
Yep.
Even the contracting, right? Like you know, but you know, it's like, they're always like, they fucking love when they're like, yeah, people are returning to office, Matt, what are you going to do? And it's like, I don't think it'll ever get there because I think the perfect balance is like it's hybrid because then and that's what people want. And they want that balance. Like there's a great, this corporate influencer I follow, Tim, I forget his last name. It's like Chusano or something. I'm fucking that up.
Okay.
But he did like he collected some data and stuff. And he said, all remote, not good. All in office, not great either.
Right.
It's that 2 or 3 day a week where it's like you hit peak productivity and happiness for
because
people.
Because like I've been able to make friends with my coworkers and only twice a week. So it's not
absolutely.
Like it's hindering me from making connections and making relationships.
Exactly. No, and then you still get the days home where you have to take care of what you got to
do.
And you just structure your schedule during the week so that you like the big stuff you got to do, just make sure you're prepped, ready to go in office.
Do they really hate the idea that you're doing a little bit of laundry while you're working?
Really, that's the thing.
Like,
right.
It's so bad. It's so awful that I'm doing a little bit of laundry.
I have always said I can be just as unproductive in the office as I can at home.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You
and that's
doom scroll at the office.
Absolutely.
I do it all the time.
Poops double.
No, I don't. I never do it.
You can edit on the toilet too.
Oh,
like
yeah,
you're like,
exactly.
No, I'm just editing. Do you ever work on your phone for editing purposes?
Not for editing purposes.
Okay,
I don't edit for work. I'm in marketing.
I'm sorry. Okay,
so, no,
gotcha.
You're good. You're good. How were you supposed to know?
I should have done my research.
You can check out my LinkedIn page at this. I work in marketing. It's hard to work on your phone. And editing work, like if I'm doing like side work editing, I would never edit on a phone.
Yeah,
that sounds really brutal. I'm not gonna lie.
It's and it's funny because Tay's in the next room. She is a social media manager.
Oh, very nice.
And but her whole day is on her phone. And it's like, yeah. So she's like, she comes home. She's like, I have headaches and I don't know why. And I'm like, I'll give you 3 guesses.
Yep. I don't even like browsing the internet on my phone that much.
Dude, I'm trying to, Jess Levin, who just did this podcast last night and whose episode actually came out, I guess when this one comes out, the prior week.
Okay.
She said something where it's like, you know, she's like, I'm just trying to find more reasons to get off my phone.
Yep.
And it's like, I think that's so important. Like, you just have to.
Yeah. Multiple of my friends came out recently and were like, I'm putting timers on my Instagram.
Dude, I'm trying to do that too. And I think that's the next part of where we're going.
Yep.
And I think that's something the younger generation that we're not giving them credit for right now, but I think they might master, which is that
they're
like
these kids are proactive, not drinking and actively staying off their phones.
Yeah, well,
we have to get yelled at to do all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and they're
well,
doing it themselves.
Yeah.
They don't get any credit. What's
well,
up?
That's the thing. What I worry about for them, right? And this is where the hip guy that we talked about comes in. What I worry about is that with like all these innovations with AI, will their brains atrophy? And like, will they like almost lose some of like the ability to think and stuff like that? Just because like, they're never going to write an essay. They're never, you know, but I don't know. Maybe I'm not being fair. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of these kids don't even like AI that much.
Is that true?
I hope I'm wrong.
By the way, youth experts right here.
Yeah.
Just
exactly. Yeah, I'm like I'm acting as if I have a degree, but I don't. But I feel like boomers like AI more than anybody else.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
My dad sent me a video of an AI generated baby doing stand up, and I'm like, oh, and you know the best details. It was on Facebook, so I was like,
like older people in corporate positions. love AI.
Yeah, what does their emails for them?
Exactly.
So it's just,
exactly. The idea. Yeah. They're so amazed by that. They can't put it down.
Yes. Yeah. It's a good point. It's interesting, like where, because it's like, do we think we're going to find that balance? Because it's going to be necessary for, I guess, just the benefit of most, because I mean, it's like anything else, right? Too much of anything is bad. So I don't know, man. Well,
when the internet came out, I mean, it's like we had to make sure that that was regulated somehow.
Then
we got obsessed with it and we made social media, and that's a whole different.
Well, that's problem. The thing. And it's like, I worry about the regulatory side of it just because, like, you know, I don't have too much faith in the government right now when it comes to those things. I'll leave it at that. But, it's, you know, Zach, we talked a little bit about before you came on the podcast about your specific low point.
Yep.
And you had a topic I was very excited to discuss today, which is it specifically relationship OCD.
Yeah.
So could you tell it, like, could you give us just sort of like a broad definition of what that means to you? Because I think it's so interesting. I think a lot of people would be able to relate.
It's a tough thing to explain. It's a bit of a tough thing to explain.
Yeah.
And it's something that, first of all, it's real. I want to make sure people understand.
Yeah.
Our OCD is real. When I first was reading about it and learning about it, I was kind of like amazed that it was real. I didn't even know. And I was definitely worried to tell people that I was experiencing, you know, certain intrusive thoughts, certain things, because I thought they were just like not going to believe me. Because OCD is so weird and specific when it comes to the things that you think and the things that pop into your head. So I realized, I sort of figured out that I had OCD later than I would have liked, but I was experiencing, you know, some unwanted thoughts, intrusions, all sorts of things, but I didn't really know what they were. I thought maybe I'm experiencing depression, maybe I'm just experiencing anxiety. But our OCD is a specific type of OCD in which your intrusive thoughts revolve around relationships. Specifically, I would say romantic relationships. Mm-hmm. And you are so in your head about the idea of love. Do I, you know, am I feeling love enough? Am I attached to my partner enough? I was at this point where, you know, I had been with Annie, my fiance now, for a couple of years. So the relationship was starting to get very serious, and a lot of big questions were coming up about, you know, I'm going to move in with her soon. I'm going to potentially spend the rest of my life with her. All these things, you know, it was my first relationship that I've ever been in, especially first long-term relationship. So a lot of these questions came up, and I just became so obsessive and so worried about the future of this relationship, the possibility of losing this relationship, the possibility that I don't love enough, the possibility that it's not right or that it could be wrong or that something is wrong with it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of what OCD is, and OCD in general, is just second guessing every little thought you have and being so in your head about what could be going right and what could be going wrong. And everything that looks like it might be going slightly wrong blows up and becomes the biggest problem in the world. Mm. And you become debilitated, and it affects your daily life.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you just described my life when I was 12, like in terms of, you know, like, because I mean, it's really, and like, as you were speaking, I was thinking about, you know, sort of my own relationship with it, right? Where it's like, I have had those thoughts, right? Where it's like, am I connecting enough? Is my partner, you know, getting enough from me? Am I ruining the relationship I'm in just by, you know, by being in my head so much? I'm curious, like, for you, when did you start having these thoughts?
So it was the beginning of 2021.
Wow, you know, the specific year around time. Wow.
You know why? Because it goes back into the New Orleans thing.
Yeah,
because I was living at home after the pandemic. And then at the end of 2020, I moved back down to New Orleans for that job I got. Mm-hmm. And that's when Annie and I sort of reunited. And I wanted to move down to be with her. Because again, we kind of got split up during the pandemic. And then we didn't split up, we stayed together. That was like our big reuniting. And we didn't live together, but we spent a lot of time together.
Okay, yeah.
So once I'd moved down, once I'd made that big change, The intrusive thoughts started to really.
And you said, like, when you guys reunited.
Yeah.
So, can you tell us, like, and again, feel free to tell as little or, you know, as whatever amount of information you're comfortable sharing. But when you had been together previously prior to 2021.
Yes, we met in 2018.
In 2018, okay. Yep. In, I don't want to age you, in high school?
In college.
In college, okay,
Yeah, so I was in my junior year, she was in her sophomore year.
Okay, gotcha. So you had met in college, you had a relationship, and then you moved to New Orleans.
Pandemic happens my senior year.
Okay.
We drive up together, actually, during the pandemic, up to her parents' house in Wisconsin, stay there for a few months.
Wow, so you did the pandemic together?
We did the pandemic together.
Wow.
And then I went home.
Okay.
After the summer, like once the summer started, and then I decided I want to go back down to New Orleans. I want to, first of all, I had a job that I was trying to get, mm-hmm. and I ended up getting it. But more importantly, I wanted to be with her. I really, really wanted to be with her. I felt very deeply in love at that point.
Sure.
And I felt like, you know, again, it was my first relationship. But it was a very strong bond.
Sure. First relationship.
It was my first relationship.
Wow. Even more of a reason to stress. You don't have the tools. I mean, you're developing that on the fly.
And I think that's a big part of why this all went down the way it did. Mm. I think OCD has a tendency to attack you at the things you love the most.
Wow.
People, and I'll sort of get into the spiel now. Like, people really do not have a good understanding of what OCD is and what it's like. Yeah. I think that the stereotype is that OCD is about things like neatness or things like having to make sure that all your M&Ms are in the right order or all these things.
Yeah.
And yes, there are examples when OCD can be like that, but OCD actually, you know, they call it obsessive compulsive disorder. That's what it stands for.
Right.
It's exactly how it sounds. An obsession followed by a compulsion. So whatever your obsession may be, maybe the obsession is that you're worried that something's going to happen to you. You're worried that you are going to fall on the stairs in front of your apartment and crack your neck. And if you don't flicker your light 3 times before
it's
you leave the
happen.
House,
yeah.
You something terrible will happen.
Can I just, from that definition?
Yes.
I had that definition of OCD where it's like, okay, like it's, again, it's about neatness, right? It's about keeping everything in line.
Yep.
There, when you said that, it made me think of, and I'm realizing this in real time, mm-hmm. when I was younger, my older brother used to, you know, he would like say something and like, you know, I'd be like doing a childish lie or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like I had the last cookie, we'll call it whatever.
Okay.
And then he'd be like, do you swear? And I'd be like, yeah. He goes, do you swear on the Holy Bible? And I'd be like, well, what do you mean? And he goes, well, if you swear on the Holy Bible and you're lying to me, you'll go to hell. And then in my mind, I would go throughout my day and I would have this intrusive thought where I'd be like, I shut the car door. I'm just giving examples, right?
Yep.
I shut the car door and I locked it 3 times. And if I didn't, I'm gonna I swear on the Holy Bible. But if I didn't do that, then I'm gonna go to hell. So then I would have to go back and do. Oh my God, I'm realizing now that I had compulsions like that to do things
yep.
like that because in my mind I was justifying it. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to hell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the thing is, it's like it's always going to be catastrophic.
Yes.
So
yeah, that's
you know that's if you're constantly having catastrophic thoughts all the time.
Yeah.
And you're like it's always to the maximum. That's like a good sign that you might be experiencing something like this.
Yeah.
So in the case of my ROCD, I think looking back, it was like the worst thing that I could possibly experience was losing her. Because, you know, as I said, my connection to her was so...
Such a sweet guy. What a lucky lady.
That's
why we're engaged, ladies.
I got to make sure that people don't think that, like, oh, I'm second-guessing thoughts or anything.
No,
marrying this woman, okay? I'm very confident in this.
You're coming on being like, I don't know, man.
No, I've learned so much about myself through this process. And
sure.
I've learned so much of, you know, learning that I had OCD. I never got officially diagnosed, but good luck finding a doctor who'll diagnose me with anything. but I did go to therapy, and my therapist was like, yeah, I think you have OCD.
Sure,
so you know what?
Sure.
That's good enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, realizing this about myself really put a lot of things into context. I even remember, like, when I I was Googling my symptoms day after day after day, couldn't find anything. You know, there was relationship anxiety, but that's like, if you're worried that your partner's cheating on you.
Yeah.
Like, that's
yeah,
relationship anxiety. That's
right.
Not what I was experiencing. I was experiencing emotional distress, intrusive thoughts about whether or not I loved my partner, which that's a conversation we'll get into in a bit, because I think the idea of what the feeling of love is supposed to be,
I understand what you're saying,
yeah, is can be a very tricky thing.
Yes.
And people put a lot of pressure on themselves. I was putting a lot of pressure on myself at that time to feel like, oh, I need to have this certain feeling of love.
And you know why I think it's so important that you're talking about this is because it's not that you're questioning the feeling you are having. Mm-hmm. It's that you're questioning whether or not the feeling you are having is what it's supposed to be.
Exactly.
Right? And I think the problem now is we, as a culture, have contaminated what love is supposed to mean as a definition.
Oh, yes.
That you are second-guessing yourself constantly.
Oh, so yes.
Zach, we solved it. We really, oh my God. Relationships.
Oh, my God. It's over.
We did it.
Okay, turn the cameras off. Turn the mic off. We're done. Okay.
So, oh, my goodness. So, you start having these thoughts around 2021.
Yep.
Right by the time you got back together with Annie.
Yep.
Right? And which must have been interesting, right? Because you had just come back together after time apart, right?
Yeah, time, yeah. Long distance.
Long distance. Yeah. Oh, right. Okay, so you were still together during that time.
We were still together the whole time. But it was, you know, long distance, so really reuniting meant a lot to us.
Yeah.
But then these intrusive thoughts start coming on, and I just sort of start questioning everything.
Yeah.
You know, I question my decision to move down. I question my decision to take the job. Mm-hmm. I question, you know, my decision to, if I was going to move in with her later. I was really worried about that, really worried about what could happen. And, you know, it just got to a point where, you know, everybody has intrusive thoughts, right?
Yeah.
But really what makes it OCD disordered versus non-disordered is whether or not you can exist day to day and be okay.
Sure.
And I was at a point where I couldn't really do that. The thoughts were very painful. Because again, as I was describing, you know, OCD attacks you at the things that are most important to you. At least that's from my experience. And, you know, having all these doubts and these questions about somebody you love so much, it's painful.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel dirty having these thoughts. I feel wrong.
Yeah.
I feel bad for having
them. Sure. Yeah. The guilt that's eating at you. Yeah.
And it's physically tolling. So I go to work. Work was tough. My drive home from work was really brutal. I remember, you know, I was going out playing basketball, you know, and all of a sudden I just like couldn't play anymore because I was just in too much stress thinking about, am I supposed to be here? Is this what this is supposed to be like? Is this what my experience is supposed to be like?
Yeah. You know, so it was like infiltrating even like your outlets.
It was infiltrating my outlets. It was infiltrating pretty much every aspect of my life.
Wow. And it was just like constantly in your head, right? Because
I could not think about it.
And were you living with Annie at the time?
I was not living with her at the time, but we were spending a lot of time together.
Okay, got it.
And, you know, she was staying at my place a lot. And yeah. I was going to her place at times.
And just from like the male experience as well, right? It's like you've been with this person for years and years and years, right? Mm-hmm. So, or I guess 3 years at this time?
3 years at that point.
So it's like, you know.
2.5.
We're 2.5, yeah. So it's like usually around that time, you know, you start getting these questions, which is probably a trigger for it, right? Which is like, am I going to spend the rest of my life with this person? Right. Is this the person that, you know, I want to be with forever?
Yep.
And, you know, I think what the stuff you're saying is like, I'm so happy we're talking about it because I don't think it gets labeled as OCD.
It doesn't.
Yeah. And it's like a lot of men just like chalk it up to like, first off, I think a lot of men get scared and that causes them to possibly act out and do things that, you know, might be destructive.
Well, I think there's this idea that like every relationship is supposed to be like doubtless. And like if you're having worrisome thoughts or you're worried about the outcome of the relationship, then you should just stop.
Right.
That because, you know, that's what all the armchair experts on Reddit will tell you. Every single Reddit comment about a relationship is the person telling them to leave the relationship.
And if there's anyone that knows about relationships, it's those Reddit people.
I know. Yeah. I look up to Redditors. They're wonderful. You know, I'm really impressed by all the things they say. So, you know, and there is an ROCD subreddit. And if you're struggling with ROCD, don't go on it. Do not. That is. You always ask at the end of the episode, what's the number one advice? No, it's in the middle of the episode. Don't go on that subreddit if you're struggling with ROCD because will struggle more.
I'm just happy you know that we ask for advice at the end of the episode.
I listen.
You're the man.
See, now he likes me.
I've always liked you. Stop.
I'm kidding. But, you know, again, I think that it goes back to the expectations of what people think that love is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And they think it's supposed to be this. And in the honeymoon phase, it is. this yeah. very magical, very high life feeling, very, you know, upbeat sort of thing. And then once that phase is over, the reality of life sets in mm-hmm. and you start living your day-to-day life with them, yep. with this person, and you realize, no, not every single moment is going to have you feeling butterflies in your stomach.
Right.
And if you have RSCD, you're feeling terrible about the fact that you are not having these butterflies in your stomach. You feel like something wrong.
Yeah.
You feel like something is wrong.
Yeah.
And that the truth is it's not. The truth is that is normal. That's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's, and you know, I will definitely discuss how it changed my philosophy on the relationship, on love and what it's meant to be, and at least from my perspective, and just the fact that maintaining and building a relationship is about the work you do in every day, the work you do mm-hmm. in and out every day,
yeah.
the caring moments that you do for your partner, the things you do for your partner that you do not want to do,
yeah,
that, the actions you take,
yeah.
The caring moments where your partner is having a difficult time or I'm having a difficult time and she comes to me, consoles me, even if she'd rather be doing something else.
Right.
Those are the things that, in my opinion and from my perspective, create the foundation for a powerful, strong relationship.
Well, and I agree. And even to that point, right, like as you're saying that, I'm like, mm-hmm. you know, I worry as a person who's also in a long-term relationship mm-hmm. with someone I love very deeply. It's like, am I doing that enough? I think about that right. on a daily basis.
Right.
You know, I'm very lucky in my relationship. I can verbally check in.
Yes.
And a lot of times she'll say no. And that's just, no, I'm just kidding. I hope no.
More.
I don't know. She's yeah. in the other room. So maybe we'll talk about it after the episode. No, but you know what I mean? But it's like, I do check in with myself, which I guess is good. But also I do have that anxiety. Right. Not, I guess at this point, not as intense as it sounds like it was for you at that time.
Yeah.
But so now it's 2021. You're starting to have those thoughts. And yep. now how is it impacting your relationship with your significant other?
That's a great question. I think there are, well, first of all, I'd be careful because I'm talking about another, I'm talking about my partner.
So yeah, no, again, shit. We can cut anything.
Yeah, we'll
so
cut
whatever
anything.
You want. Yeah.
I don't want to say shit that she's, that's going to piss her
yeah,
off.
Yeah, not at all. Yeah. I think we might've said her name too. Billy, so, but is that okay?
She's okay. She's
right.
okay with me
all
saying
right, perfect.
It's okay. I won't say her address. All right. I won't dox. I'm not going to dox my fiance.
Do you want me to send you this episode and then you can like look through and we'll do that.
Amazing.
I could do that for you this
that
week.
That would be
perfect.
Awesome. She, I think
it.
She'd be happy with that.
You
too.
Got it, dude. I'll send it to you.
That would be great. So I, you know, what really comes to mind when you ask that question is that, you know, my drive home from work was really,
yeah.
I mean, it sucks already, man. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
How long was your drive?
It wasn't that bad. It was like 35
That's
minutes.
Still tough, man.
You can hit traffic.
Dude,
New Orleans.
Used to drive to a job 20 minutes and I've commuted an hour and a half on a train. I'll take the train every day.
Wow, really?
Dude, it's because you actively have to do something.
Yep, exactly.
You're fucking exhausted.
Yeah.
And I love sports talk radio with Michael Kay. So
yeah.
that's, you know,
oh,
I
yeah,
can,
so that's fair.
You know, I can only take so much though. Which I love him. He's fantastic, but
good.
You know, you got to switch
yeah,
it up every
exactly.
once in a while.
But you know, I think having to go back to my apartment where she was most of the time after work and have my intrusive thoughts at the same time as being with her and spending time with her
yeah.
and feeling guilt,
God.
Feeling a lot of guilt over yeah. like, having these thoughts and the guilt becomes pain and
then you're wasting you know, time with it because like you're not spending your time with her.
I can't be involved. Yeah. I can't have the energy that I need to have. And you know, talk about a rock of a person. Annie, the fact that she dealt with my, not just my intrusive thoughts, but you know, me verbalizing these thoughts, because again, verbalizing is a compulsion. So you have obsessions and then compulsions. You
God,
need to,
do I have this? I'm literally yeah. talking about how
yeah.
I'm going to verbalize
yeah.
it later.
Verbalizing can definitely be a compulsion.
Yeah.
And internet research can be a compulsion.
Yeah.
So obsessive compulsive disorder, you have an obsession. And in order to combat the obsession, you do a compulsion. So it might be verbalizing.
Right.
It might be the flickering of the light.
Yeah.
It might be obsessive researching on the internet. Now, Annie actually has a OCD as well. She somehow
wow.
got a diagnosis. I don't know how the fuck you do that, but you know,
it's tough. Hot to get a diagnosis now. It's everybody
yeah.
wants one.
Everybody
they're
wants
trending.
One. Yeah, exactly. It's a you know low supply, high demand, low supply. This is just simple economics here. But you know, and she is like her compulsion is like obsessive researching on the internet.
That's interesting.
So,
okay.
And that could be a really dark place because you're going down.
Yeah. Oh, you never know what you're going to get.
Reddit, all these sorts of things. So that, you know, those are examples of compulsions. One of mine is verbalizing. So, you know, she'd have to hear the difficult things that I was thinking in my head. And she obviously she didn't like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was saying, you know, do I really love you? I was explaining these sorts of things. And, you know, that's stressful for her. But she was so unbelievably supportive and so unbelievable. I couldn't imagine really what was going on in her head. And I couldn't imagine the amount of resilience it took and the amount of dedication it took for her to be like, this person is having, my partner's having so many doubts about the relationship. He's, you know, so worried all the time. He's distracted. He can't be the partner that I need him to be. But she decided to stay with me anyway.
And you're, just to go back, you're telling her these thoughts, right? You're telling her the thoughts you have.
Yeah.
So you're literally sitting down with your partner and you're saying, I'm having these thoughts and this, because on the surface, and I want to emphasize that on the surface, not what it means, on the surface, it sounds like you're having doubts.
Yes.
Right? And she has to sit there and... The key to any relationship is find a woman who can stand you. Because
yes.
Literally...
No, that's essentially what this is.
Yeah.
And she stood me at my low point. She stood me at my worst moment.
Yeah.
Which, you know, think about what that means for the future of our relationship. Think about the strength.
Very mature way to look at it.
Think about the strength that she gained. And that following, once I, you know, started recovering from this and got better, that I was able to gain the understanding of myself and the understanding of the fact that, I have OCD and I'm going to have to live with it and I'm going to have to work with it. Because, and, you know, relationship OCD, yes, I said it attacks romantic relationships. It attacks the thing you love the most. It can also attack other relationships in your life. Deep, close friendships.
Sure.
I have a lot of deep, close friendships.
Oh, my God.
So when, you know, things go wrong in those friendships, it affects me greatly. I've had moments with friends where, you know, I guess I'll say falling outs and things like that. Those affected me, you know, profoundly and caused me pain. Mm-hmm. And because I put so much emphasis on relationships and because they mean so much to me and because I have OCD, you know, it knows where to attack. It knows where to get me.
Right.
It knows how to trigger me. It knows exactly what it's doing. So I have to, without doing compulsions, I have to combat it productively rather than just doing the compulsion that it wants me to do.
And what strategies do you implement to combat it?
Oh, that's
I got great questions, guys.
Sip of water.
That's my
sip of water.
He's gonna take
one.
A sip for water. This episode is brought to you by, no, I'm just kidding, we don't have any ads. That'd be cool though.
That would be cool.
BetterHelp, I think, would love this podcast.
Yeah, I think they would.
That's very sweet. I was joking.
Yeah.
But no, I don't do this for the money or the sponsorship. It's important
to
share.
It's a great show, man. I'm just gonna say that.
Honestly, I was waiting. It's been 57 minutes and it took you that long to say it, Zach. So thank you so much for coming on. And we hope you're still hoping we left you a little higher.
Thank you so much for coming on and go fuck yourself. This is a great show. I've enjoyed watching it.
It means the world to me to hear you say that.
Great concept, and you have, and you create great environment here. And you
stop
have great
it,
guests,
you
all the stuff.
How do you combat it? comics, we can never take compliments. So, I appreciate that very much.
How do you combat OCD? I think number one, you have to ignore the voices in your head. You have to realize, I can be kind of an unreliable narrator, and sometimes the things that pop into my head aren't true and aren't accurate.
Can I tell you, just to pause there, because I think that's so important. I was reading a book. It's called Solve for Happiness. Mm-hmm. I read it years ago. But one of the things that always stayed with me is like, okay, well, let's think about who are you, right? And it talks about this idea that you are the observer of what is going on around you and things like that, because the observer cannot observe itself, right? And it talks about it because a lot of people, what they do is they identify with thoughts. And you're not your thoughts, because your thoughts change. And I struggled with that idea initially. But when I read that and you really think about it, your thoughts have a tendency to change. And you, the stable you that you are, that when you were 7, that you were at 13, that you are now, you are not your thoughts.
You're your actions.
Your
words.
Yes.
And your words. And your actions and your words.
Right.
That's what I think. I think people are their actions and their words. Nobody's going to remember you for your thoughts.
Yeah, that's another lovely way to put it. Yeah, you have to, because specifically with action, right? I think now we've entered a culture where it's if you even, you know, entertain you know, certain negative thoughts, right, or intrusive thoughts,
yep,
that you're inherently a bad person because you're doing that. Right. But the thing is, to your point, no, it's about how your actions to do that, right? Like, you yeah might have an intrusive thought on a person on the street. I'm going to hurt this person that's yep just walking down the street. People have had that intrusive thoughts.
Absolutely.
But you doing nothing is who you are.
Right. And that's yeah the other thing. And that's a good point. Everybody has intrusive thoughts.
Yes.
You don't have yeah to have OCD to have intrusive thoughts.
Right.
Everybody,
right,
you know, you drive or you're driving and you could say, oh, I could just veer off and you know, end this. And
right, right,
obviously you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
But you still think about it.
Right.
Or
right,
if you are having dinner, you could be like, oh, I have this fork. I could just stab somebody with this fork. Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
But
right,
it's an intrusive thought. And, you know, if you don't have OCD, you're not going around saying, oh, I'm a stabber. You know, you're not going
right
around and saying,
right.
But if you have OCD and you're constantly thinking about what you're going to do with that fork, you're going to start to have some struggles and you're going to start to think, am I the kind of person who stabs people?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, the amount of questioning, the amount of second guessing, you second guess everything,
yeah,
every little thing you do, you know, every little thing you feel, mm-hmm, you're always second guessing yourself to the point where, again, if you have OCD, it becomes so distracting and so painful that your daily life becomes something that's difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's, I mean, spot on. So not to interrupt you, but so you were talking about, your thoughts, and I feel bad. I interrupted you. I can't remember where you were going.
No, you're good.
My God. What were you saying before?
I was saying, you know, oh, about ignoring your thoughts.
Thank you. I'm
ignoring
sorry.
Ignoring yeah your thoughts and basically saying, I can be an unreliable
yes
narrator
yeah
because what goes on in my head. And nobody, what goes on in everybody's head can be unreliable.
Yeah.
People have thought, and exactly, people have intrusive thoughts in any scenario. And you kind of just have to come to the conclusion that, you know, first of all, I'm not defined by my thoughts, which mm-hmm you put wonderfully. And I can ignore them. They don't have to define me.
Yeah.
I don't have to listen to them. I don't have to take every little thing that pops into my head so seriously.
Yeah.
So that's a great way to do it.
And what a great reminder, too, to be able to... Do you find yourself, you have to remind yourself of that fact?
Sometimes. Sometimes
I think that's a gift, because it also, when you remind yourself of that, the relief...
Right.
Oh, my goodness. You know, you don't think that you're the terrible person that you are, because you remember, you're just, you're just a person.
Yep.
Right? And
exactly.
You have to remember, we're just animals.
Yep.
Right?
We're just animals.
So it's
we're
like,
programmed. We're
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We're chemical mush. So
yeah, right.
You know,
so it's, you know,
there's weird stuff happening in your body.
Yes.
You know, like
yeah.
What? Like, I feel like I'm giving a puberty talk. You are going to be experiencing
and
weird
your body's
things
gonna change,
your body. Yeah.
And you're going to start having a lot more fun. No, I'm sorry. That is a terrible puberty talk.
The other thing that I think really changed my experience for the positive was medication.
Oh,
I was
interesting.
Very
okay.
resistant to the idea of taking antidepressants.
I was too.
Because, you know, stigma. I
yeah.
think the only reason really was stigma. And I was also worried about, you know, the fact that it could, maybe it was going to change the way I think or change
yeah.
the way I experience
and
things.
And also just relying on anything is very...
Or feeling like
yeah.
I have to rely on it. But after a while, I was like, this is you know what's unsustainable? Living like this. So
yep.
I basically came to the conclusion that I had to, you know, seek that help.
We love asking this question on the pod. What are you on? You don't have to share. There's no pressure.
I'm a Lexapro.
You're a Lexapro guy.
I'm a
Interesting.
Lexapro guy. You know, I've been on it for 4 years now.
That's good. Okay.
Consistently. And it, obviously not everybody has the same experience with SSRIs.
Sure.
And they're not a one-size-fits-all.
No,
and
no,
people
no.
have to do a bunch of trials and figure out what works for them. Lexapro has been so wonderful for me.
Good. I'm glad
because
to hear that.
Because really, it's not about changing the way I think. It's about clearing my head.
Yeah.
Because that's what I needed more than anything. It was too busy up here.
Yes.
And I couldn't get anything done and I
yeah.
couldn't live my life.
Yep.
So I had to clear what was going on in my head so I could resume in in a more peaceful space.
I love, thank you for one, just being so open about sharing that. But mm-hmm. the other thing too, and I try to bring this up whenever we talk about it on the pod, the thing you have to remember, because for me, it's like, you know, I think there's like an anxiety now. It's like, oh, we're over-medicating everybody and like whatever.
Right.
And that may be true to some extent. Mm-hmm. However, what I will say is we have never lived in an age where you carry around a dopamine zapping device in your pocket. So it's okay if you need a little help.
It's okay.
That's all I'm trying to say. Yeah, you know, exactly. So it's like, because I was very resistant as well,
right?
And then I went to go see Gary Goldman's The Great Depression. Have you ever watched that?
No, I haven't.
It's on HBO. Zach, you'll love it.
Oh, he is, wow!
Are you a fan of Gary or no?
No, I'm go home. Not
I'll send you. Oh my god, I'm going to send you his
state
abbreviations bit. Yep. It's genius. But that special, he talks about his depression and going on all these antidepressants. Yep. It's a great, great special.
That's cool.
It's, yeah, I went to see the taping, and that's what got me on meds.
Oh, that's great, man.
Yeah, so it was cool.
And you know, Annie was definitely part of the reason that I was convinced.
And she was,
to do
I'm
this.
Sure, very supportive. We all know her at this point.
Yeah,
she's
exactly.
Best.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to dox her though, but you know, don't show up to my house. But anyway,
please don't.
So medication was big, and then I was in therapy in high school, but my therapist was in New Jersey, so I had to find a therapist in New Orleans.
Okay.
And I ended up finding a really good therapist
nice.
In New Orleans who, you know, sort of helped me work through these things and did not make me feel bad about having these thoughts and really kind of explained it to me in a logical way so that I could understand it, because OCD is illogical. It screws with the foundations of what reason and logic are supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's all emotions and it's all worry and it's all catastrophe. So, you know, trying to bring logic back into it and trying to bring practicality back into it, I think really helped me a lot as well. So, you know, and distraction. The fourth one is distraction. Distraction is key. You know, being able to, you know, watch a movie or play some basketball or do something like that, once your head is a little clearer, then you can go back to doing those things. Then you can distract yourself,
yeah.
And then you're really helping yourself. So it's a combination of medication, therapy, and, you know, a little bit of discipline, a little bit of introspection,
sure.
A little bit of, God, the word self-help, the term self-help is one of the most toxic words in the world.
You think I'll so? Use
it. I mean, there's too many quacks out there. I'm sorry. I hate
yeah,
to say it.
No, that's fair.
People might come at me, but there's too many quacks out there.
Let us know in the comments. We'll increase engagement. No, I'm just kidding. No,
it's a shame. You
no
want to
I understand
say
what you're saying.
No, I'm,
yeah. There's definitely, I understand.
Yeah. But a little bit of that and mix can make a big difference.
Yeah.
Just, you know, those three things. But don't be afraid to ask for help.
I love that so much. And so just to come back to the timeline. So 2021, you have this conversation with Annie.
Yep.
She seems to be very supportive. You start going to therapy on medication.
Yep.
And now you're still in New Orleans.
Still in New Orleans.
And you're living with her, right? And
I'm basically living with
basically
her.
Basically living with her. Yep. And so I guess you mentioned that she also has OCD as well?
That's something that she learned later.
Okay.
But she was definitely dealing with, you know, emotional distress because of this. You know, she worried about me, my health.
Oh, God.
And then she worried about the relationship too, obviously,
that's
because the nature of
so sweet.
Of the intrusions
yeah.
are so, you know, sad. You know, they're sad.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, my partner's worrying about whether they love me or not. Like, that's so sad. And it probably made her worry about the future relationship. I'm sure there were times where she was, you know, not very hopeful, but she stuck it out anyway.
Yeah.
Because hopefully, I think because she loved me and because, you know, she wanted to be with me. And I think she knew deep down that I wanted to be with her too.
That's and, beautiful.
You know, because there was never a moment where I was really, there was never a moment during this entire thing where I was like, I want to break up with her.
Yeah.
I had to fight. You know, I
yeah.
was fighting for every waking moment.
Yeah.
But because of that, I never came to that conclusion. I came to the conclusion that I'm going to fight this no matter how hard it gets.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep going because I love this person. Like, because I love this person.
Oh, no. It's okay. It happens sometimes.
Okay.
We'll just we'll get it going again. I am so sorry.
No, you're good.
No.
You're good.
It keeps it going. Come on, baby. Sometimes it overheats and just... All right, we're back. No, that's beautiful. And the reason I think it's so important that we're talking about it today, right, is because I think in today's world,
mm-hmm.
I don't think there is enough emotional education, we'll call it, for men in this way. So, for example, when I was younger, in my early 20s, right, I would have these thoughts maybe with a partner I was with, and I would take that to mean, oh, this isn't it.
Yep.
Oh, this isn't, I'm not doing things right. I'm with the wrong person. I'm doing the wrong thing. And that would cause destructive behavior, right, to the relationship and, you know, to, you know, the people involved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm so grateful you came on and like we're talking about it, because, you know, today it's just, there's no support for men in this way. And that's why I think a lot of men are struggling. Greg Melly, who's a great comedian and friend of mine, is working on some material about like masculinity and you know, that sort of thing.
Yep.
And he talks about in his material, you know, I think in the past year, there, you can fact check me on this, please, and please do, even though we don't fact check on this pod. But I,
yeah, what the fuck? The
suicides, I know. Suicides last year, I think 80% were men.
Jesus Christ.
Or the majority, you know, oh we'll say the majority gosh. Were men. But it's like, yeah. Because there's no room for these kinds of conversations, and they're not accessible.
Men so, are like, really afraid to be vulnerable. They're really afraid to share these things. I was afraid to share these things because I thought that people were just going to tell me to break up with her.
Yeah.
And I was terrified of that.
That's the,
It took me a lot of guts to tell my parents because I was like, what is their reaction going to be?
Right.
If you're in pain, you should leave her. But that's not, in this case, that wasn't true.
Right. That would have been
that
horrible.
That would have been so much worse. I can't even tell you how much worse that would have been.
Yeah.
But that's what people, you know, they didn't, first of all, ROCD is not something that's discussed very much in the public world.
You know what's funny is like, I had never heard the term.
Right.
And then when you texted me the topic, I kind of understood what you were talking about just from like life experience.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But when I was, you know, researching the symptoms and I found out what ROCD was, I was like, this is lining up exactly with what I'm experiencing. And trust me, I looked at a lot of different things and they weren't lining up. But, you know, OCD is discussed a lot, and I do think it's discussed sometimes incorrectly, but it's discussed a lot. ROCD specifically, not discussed that much. It's still pretty new. I don't think it's a DSM-5 thing or whatever. I think it's...
Oh, that's interesting. It's not in there.
It's still... it has a Wikipedia page, but, you know,
half of our aunts have... That's something. Hey, make sure you donate. Yeah. Wikipedia. I'm just kidding.
Wikipedia's great. You can't get through college without it. But and we went to college before... ChatGPT.
Right. So, oh my God. We're going to have to start saying that now.
God. Exactly.
Oh, that's going to be the next thing that's going to make us feel old.
Yep. ROCD is not discussed that much. And I think people are scared to talk about it because they're scared to be judged. And they're scared that they're going to be like, somebody's going to tell you to break up with your partner.
Absolutely. And you know, I think I commend you so much just to be able to sit down with your partner and say, I'm having these thoughts, because that kind of radical honesty and truth, you can't do in a lot of relationships.
I know.
Right?
I know.
You just can't be that open.
But
with
that's
them.
A good way to know that it's a good relationship.
Exactly.
And that's
what I'm saying.
That's a really good sign.
Right. To not be met with
us.
Judgment in that way.
You know, we're getting married in March.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm and
you tell her in February. you're like till you waited. No, but obviously, yeah.
We're getting married. I couldn't.
Where's the wedding? Just the address for the people.
The wedding's in New Orleans. Yeah. Oh.
We'll do the address. People can come.
But you know, I couldn't be more confident. I couldn't be more happy with the fact that we're doing this together.
This is so beautiful, Zach.
Oh,
I'm
so
happy
sweet.
For it, dude. This is like. But again, this is like the types of conversations I think men need to be having and be able to open up about.
I know.
But I think to your point, the fear is being judged. And because there
is
this, there is this narrative going on that, you know, men are the enemy. Men are, and I'm not, you know, look, everyone has their issues. Every group, everybody. I'm just saying that I think men right now are reluctant to share these types of feelings because, like you said, they are going to be met with judgment and they are going to be told by their partners and society that you are bad.
Right.
That is where I think the fear lies.
Or other men will judge them even further.
Right. And some men will say, keep that shit to yourself.
Yeah, keep that shit to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, don't be telling people that.
Right.
People don't want to hear about that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know. Or worse, that's gay.
Yeah, like, the worst. If
feeling,
you're
like, oh, you're having feelings. That's so gay, dude. Like,
yeah.
I'm kidding. But you know, it's hard to be open. it's really hard, and I don't think it's just men. I think it's hard for
yeah, and that's hard. I'm very happy you said that, because it's not just men, it's just people in general. It's hard to
open up,
and it's also very hard to express those types of feelings in an articulate way and be understood in the way you mean it.
It's very hard.
Which I'm very happy to hear. It sounds like you have the ability to do, and I think a lot of men maybe just don't have that ability to do it.
Yeah,
you know, like they would just be like, I'm having these feelings, so it must mean XYZ. And it's like, no, let's look at the thoughts. Right?
I think the worst thing, and you know, people's thoughts are, they're very confusing in general. Yeah. And, you know, difficulty, we've got, you know, a lot of mental illness, we've got all sorts of things going on. But I think the best thing we can do is create an environment where people feel comfortable to discuss difficult things. Because people are, you know, I like to give people credit. I like to think people are smart enough to discuss difficult things.
Yeah, and that's
you know, sometimes people don't even realize how articulate they can be, how smart they can be.
I love that you said that. Yeah. I think the reason a lot of people maybe don't feel that way is because we're not looking at the right forums to have these conversations.
Right, exactly.
You can't have fucking camera. I'm gonna give it like five seconds to cool down. So okay, sorry, YouTube, perfect. You're not gonna see Zach for 2 minutes.
No.
But it's okay. What I think is, how am I trying to say this? Like, Reddit is not the place to have this conversation.
No.
And you can't have this conversation on Reddit.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, you have to just be able to talk about it, like, with a clinical professional.
Right.
Or a close friend who, you know, won't meet you with judgment. But again, that's hard because a lot of people maybe don't have access to that.
And also, you have to, as I said before, you have to accept the fact that you might not be the reliable narrator.
Yes.
You have to.
That's so important. Thank you for bringing us back to that.
You have to accept the fact that you can't just go to therapy just to be reaffirmed in everything you already believe.
And ain't that the problem right now? I mean, don't you know some people? That's the amazing thing with therapy now, is like you really do look at some people and you look at like, yeah, I've been in therapy for 7 years. And you're like, you have not changed.
Yeah, what the hell?
At all.
Or the worst, they said, my therapist said I'm right about this.
Like, yeah, which,
like they'll
do
that. People will pull that out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, like, come on.
Yeah.
Have a little bit of critical thinking and like have your own thoughts.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's what's more important. Like a therapist is a great tool. It's a great thing to bounce your thoughts off of, but that's really what it is. And it can be a good relationship, and perhaps in some cases it can be a friend. That's a good thing. But it's not, you know, it's not a god. It's not,
yeah,
you can't
it's
just
not, yes.
take their word.
Yeah.
You can't just, you know, take them word for word. You have to do introspective thinking. You actually have to think about things on your own. You can't just repeat what they say.
Yes. Yeah.
To your friends.
No, you're 100% right.
That's not what it's meant to be.
You're 1,000% right. And, you know, the thing is, it's just people innately, they just want answers to everything. Yep. And it's like,
you can't blame them.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, it's, there we go. Perfect. We're back. No, and you can't, like, your therapist's job is to give you the tools to find the answers yourself.
Correct.
Because you are the only one that can provide those answers. It has to come from within you. Otherwise, it's not going to stick.
Exactly.
And it's just like, then you're just going to, you know, but it's a different conversation.
Again, different conversation.
We solved enough problems today. We'll let the therapy.
Exactly. We'll come back.
But that
we'll
being said, there are some wonderful therapists I've worked with like throughout the years. You know what I mean?
I love my therapist.
That's fantastic.
I've had the same therapist that I've had since I was like 14.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's really nice.
He's a great man.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have asked for a better therapist.
Oh, that's so
but
sweet.
But I know what he is and what he isn't. So
yeah, and I'm sure that like if he heard you say that, you'd be like, good.
Yes,
like, you know what I mean?
Hope
like,
so.
Which is what a good therapist should say. Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, I couldn't, you know, I've learned so much again about myself, about what it means to have OCD, about what it means to experience these patterns, and what it means to not see your internal monologue as the end all be all.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think pattern recognition is a really big one too, because, you know, you have the obsessions, you have the compulsions.
Everything. You know what's so funny is we just, again, not to bring up the Jess Levin episode.
Yep.
That was her advice she gave at the end of the episode. Notice patterns.
Right.
And
exactly.
I love that.
And I think that's a great advice in many regards.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's, again, you're, as I said, like your words, your actions mean a lot more than your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be having a really difficult time up here, but you can still be a great fucking person.
Yeah.
If you have good, you know, if you have good intentions and you make people feel good and then the rest will come if you take care of yourself.
Yeah.
So.
And I think it's so wonderful to hear that, you know, you're lucky to find or and have a partner that understands you in that way. I am infinitely lucky to have met someone that also understands me in that way.
Yeah, definitely.
And if you are listening to this and you feel like you couldn't have these conversations with your partner, you know, I don't mean to, you know, be
a Redditor and tell them to break up.
Yeah, no, and that's not what I'm saying. I don't even know if it warrants that, right? Because maybe it's just, maybe you need to start having those conversations, exactly. Right? And maybe it'll even open up things that you didn't even know were possible about connecting with your partner. So I think
that's true. That's very true.
Zach, this was wonderful, my friend. Man. Dude, we already covered advice, but do you have anything else you want to say, like on the topic of advice? I know we... First guest to do it in the middle, which is fun.
Yeah, I did it. Well, my advice back there is going to be a lot better than this one. But, you know, don't take your inner monologue too seriously. Remember that people aren't going to remember you for your thoughts. Mm-hmm. People are going to know you and love you for the actions that you do and the things you say. And your caringness and you know, that's really what sticks with people. And, you know, don't seek advice from Reddit. Don't seek personal advice from Reddit. I feel like I could use that line for the rest of my life, and I'll always be correct.
That should be an epitaph, honestly. It should.
And, you know, eventually, with help, asking for help, therapy, medication, you know, a little bit of discipline, a little bit of this and that, I improved. I got better. You know, I still have OCD. I still have intrusive thoughts, but I've really learned to get comfortable with them. I've learned how to ignore them. I've learned how to move past them, let them happen.
Sure.
And I think anybody would be capable of doing that. I truly do.
Zach, that is so beautiful, man. Truly one of my favorite episodes. Zach, tell the people where they can find you.
Yes, you can find me on Instagram at Zach's Laugh Comedy or on TikTok at ZSlaff, I think.
A lot of really great advice if you're looking to do stand-up on there. Yes.
Yes, I like to do videos to help, you know, people who are just getting into stand-up. You know, learn how to do it. I think it's called Comedy 101. Look at me not knowing the name of my own show. It's great. It's great. You'll enjoy it. You'll love it.
I love that so much because it says so much about how the age we live in, where it's like you just got to put shit online. I don't remember what I
really
called
know
it.
What it's called, but there's, it's technically it's in a YouTube playlist, so you can see it on TikTok. You can see it on YouTube. And yeah, man, this was awesome. Dude, I'm so grateful that you had me on.
Honestly, truly one of my favorite episodes. Thank you so much, and you know, dude. I just need to take a beat because that conversation was amazing. I think so many people get so many wonderful things out of it. So I have to really thank you just for being so generous with opening up. Dude.
Oh, man. I would do it anytime.
Thank you so much. And here's to hoping we left you a little higher. We did it.
Yeah, man. We did it. Look at that. Oh, God.